energy by solar power a few weekends ago. It can be done, and those are the sustainable jobs that, and we have, Governor Cuomo, you are putting tens of millions of dollars into research in our universities for clean energy technology at Binghamton University. And we're going to build an incubator. We're going to incubate those jobs into our community. And that's what we should be doing. We believe in the future of our country. That's what modernity is, and that's where we should go. Oil and gas is old technology. We should be going towards new technology.
All right, Philip McAleer, your response?
Well, you see, we started off talking about science, right? So, you know, Kate talked about science, Mayor Ryan talked about science. Now we've moved on to articles in the New York Times and articles in the Rolling Stone. You know, because the science isn't there, so we're quoting the Rolling Stone now as the oracle. Sorry, I think Americans should base their future on something other than discredited articles in the New York Times, which were attacked 2 weeks in a row by the New York Times ombudsman as inaccurate and unfair. Rolling Stone, we went from scientific. Kate had started off talking about science, then she produced a photoshopped photograph. I mean, a photoshopped photograph is not an epidemiological study. It's not a scientific document. It's something you made up. We're at your computer. We need to
Actually,
look at the science. We need to look at the science.
And what is the science that you cite that says that fracking is safe?
Well, it's a vast petri dish of America. There's been fracking going on in America since, I believe, 1947. I mean, the science is out there. The petri dish is out there. There have been no scientific epidemiological studies to show that fracking has harmed human health in any way.
So the
water in Dimmock, Pennsylvania, it's safe. It was the poster child. I mean, we need to. I'd love to ask Kate and Matt, do they believe the EPA? You called the EPA in and said the local environmental regulatory authority said the water is safe. This wasn't good enough for the residents of Carter Road, who 11 litigants in a community of 1,500 people. 1,500 people signed a petition in Dimmock to say our water is fine. It's the same. It's ever. 11 people were litigants. If you look at the statistics, those 11 people are the 1%. The people of Dimmock who signed a petition to say our water is fine are the 99%. Again, I come to America and I hear people talk.
Well, we're hoping you're enjoying the first episode, the first Friday that WHFR.fm is featuring the Friday morning report from Democracy Now! Democracy Now! Is hosted by Amy Goodman and is featured on over 800 radio stations in North America. It's returning to the Detroit airwaves after being off the air on any station here for a couple of years. We picked it up at WHFR by request from some of our listeners. And now we're only airing the Friday edition of the daily Monday through Friday show. And if you have any comments or questions about it, always welcome. Send email to us at whfr@hfcc.edu. And by the way, you can find out more about Democracy Now! And listen to all their archived shows, including today's, all over again, at their website, democracynow.org. Well, it's now time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. And I'm your host, Jay Koronek, here with Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director. Welcome to 2013, Dennis.
Well, good to be here. I don't think my mic is on down here. There we go.
There we are.
A little check here.
Yes.
I do want to say, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I want to say happy birthday You had a birthday yesterday.
Oh yeah, another day older and another year older, and here we are again. So
okay, well
maybe we'll get it right this time. That's what I always say about a new year. So
okay,
always another chance, I guess, until there isn't any more.
Wow.
But thank you for your wish there. Nonetheless, we are here with you. This is Local News and Alternative Views for Dearborn and the surrounding area. We call our show the New WHFR Journal because it's not the same as last week. Today we're expecting a phone interview to, and those folks will call in a few moments, from the Michigan Peace Team. And you may not be familiar with them, although they've been in Dearborn.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to keep the peace here. And we'll talk to them. It's a unique, nonviolent, pacifist group that is not only working here in Michigan, as I said, even in Dearborn, but also around the world. And there's been some major confrontations in around the world, and the Michigan Peace Team has been there trying to not just defuse it, but to get people to stop acting that way to each other.
Absolutely.
So we hope to have a nice, long discussion with them. Often I try to do a pacifist, if you will, related show at the end of the year, and in this case, those people were busy trying to keep the peace. There was still war going on. And so we're going to start the year with this. And maybe this could be the year of peace. Imagine, what a concept. Does there need to be violence? How do you combat violence? With more violence? Well, I don't think so. But the regular listeners of this show know that I'm a pacifist by practice anyway.
Well, a big part of what they do, from what I understand, the Michigan Peace Team, is educate. They'll go in and they'll teach people ways to resolve conflict without the use of violence or even bad words, you know.
Yeah.
When I spoke with a wonderful lady yesterday. She won't be on the calling in today. She won't be one of the people. There are two people calling in. Mm-hmm. But I spoke with Liz Walter, and she had said that as we were speaking, they were having people were getting ready. They're sending them over to the West Bank, and she called it a semi-permanent presence there, which I thought was an interesting way to word it.
The West Bank, is that around Benton Harbor?
No. No, it's a different bank.
Okay.
It's on the.
Can I make a withdrawal?
Yeah, it's the ATM machine works there. No, seriously, it's what they're doing is it's dangerous, and I think we'll actually have an opportunity to hear about some of the confrontations they were on the wrong end of.
Yeah, we'll start with their history, and we've got two of their leaders, current leaders, but mm-hmm. Peter Doherty has been with them for quite a while, and Mary Hanna, I'll have her give her background. I think it's going to be a conference call. Ooh.
Yeah, so high tech.
Yeah, high tech. For WHFR anyway. And so we'll talk to them, Michigan Peace Team, about their missions, goals, and methods. In the past, we've talked to people from Peace Action of mm-hmm. Michigan, and they have a different purpose and direction, but again, their goal is peace.
But that's more about foreign policy, is it not, the Peace Action?
No, Michigan Peace Team is a little bit more international in its scope in terms of activities.
Oh, I see.
Michigan Peace Action is pretty much as regionally based. Sometimes they do protests at nuclear power plants or nuclear missile facilities, things of that sort. They've gone to Washington, D.C. for some protests, peaceful protests, of
sure.
course, outside the White House and in other places of the country. I would say Michigan Peace Team actually has a little bit more wider scope since they're regularly sending some of their trained members, as you said, to the Middle East
right.
Recently, but in other places too. We're all one planet. Okay, the phone is ringing. Let me get that now on the air live. Hello, this is WHFR. Jay speaking. Hi, Peter. Hi, Mary. I guess you were sharing telephones there. Okay. Hi, Mary. Okay. I'll put you on the air just shortly. Just did a little introduction for you. Dennis Reimars is here as myself, and just hang on, and we'll be talking to you in about 10 seconds. Okay. As you heard, I was talking in the background among myself there. We should have Peter Doherty and Mary Hanna on the line. Can you folks hear me okay?
Yes.
Yep, just fine.
Okay, good. I want to make sure your volume is good there. Well, as I said to you, and our listeners probably heard on the side of the microphone, Michigan Peace Team may not be a group that many of our listeners are aware of, even though you've had some of your missions, if you will, right here in Dearborn in the last year or two. So whoever wants to begin, give us the sort of little history in the background of the Michigan Peace Team, including its mission and goals. And we actually have reserved about 20 to 30 minutes, and if that's good for you folks, feel free to explain yourselves.
Peter, why don't you start, since you were one of the founders?
Okay, so Michigan Peace Team was founded in 93, and our vision was to change the world through the alternatives to violence, where we believe in the power of nonviolence to transform the world, people power, and grounded in a spirituality of nonviolence, that everything is interconnected, everything is sacred, everything is awesome and wonderful, and out of that strength, we can build a new world. So Michigan Peace Team sees itself as helping to empower people in this direction. So we do presentations with this vision, and we do nonviolence trainings to actually help people be empowered. And our trainings are hands-on practice of skills. So not only the vision of nonviolence and what nonviolence is, but then practicing communication skills, active listening, iMessages, what we call Clara, and then hassle lines, where somebody's in your face or angry, you can be grounded and tap into the humanness of this person who's yelling at you or threatening you. And we try to have people experience these through role plays so that they develop this empowerment. And then we actually place peace teams, violence reduction peace teams in conflict and war zones. Here in the United States, we call them domestic peace teams, such as the Arab American Festival.
Yeah.
And then we had a peace team, the last one we placed was December 10th in at the state capitol. The right to work law was being passed, signed, and one estimate was 17,000 people were there in protest of that bill, union people and supporters of unions, and the right of people to organize. And there was concern for violence, so we were asked by the MEA to place a peace team, and we did. And so there were instances where we know we actually kept people from being brutally beaten. If we were not there, they would have been brutally beaten.
Well, so I think your folks have done it. Yeah, excuse me.
Pardon me?
I said, I think your folks have been doing a great job, and I don't think enough people know about the Michigan Peace Team and that your activities not only are local, like here in Dearborn at the last time anyway, at the Arab American Festival, but also, you know, just and you are successful. A lot of people say, well, nonviolence, that can't happen. Everybody's violent, and if you don't have a weapon, you're just going to get beat up. And of course, that can happen, but you lead by example, I think, and that's definitely to your credit. Perhaps you should explain the effectiveness if somebody wants to talk about, well, I assume that some of your teachings involve the actual writings and the practices of Martin Luther King Jr., as well as maybe, I don't know, Henry David Thoreau,
Gandhi,
of course, and how he was able to, you might say, liberate India from the British Empire. It took a while, but it was nonviolence. I mean, as much as he was able to maintain it anyway, some people were backsliding when they get beaten up. I think the animal response in us does want to fight if somebody is hurting us, does want to strike back. But this is a very effective approach. I think Gandhi called it, and I have read a little bit on this, satyagraha, or truth force.
Truth power, yep.
Truth power. So maybe you want to talk about this and its effectiveness and how your training sessions are more than just conflict resolution. They're actually training people to be if you will, mediators in these violent situations. Mary, maybe you'd want to continue here.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think when I first started getting involved with doing peace team work through Michigan Peace Team, I did it on the basis that most people would sort of expect, out of a sort of feeling like this was the best way to morally deal with conflict, that this was the best way to spiritually deal with conflict. And so those things resonated with me. But what was really exciting is that at the very end of 2011, Erica Chenoweth and Maria Steffen came out with research that goes over the last 100 years, the 300 biggest overthrows of civil society, and compared it to what happens when civil overthrow happens violently versus nonviolently. And overwhelmingly, the statistics in every category show that when you use nonviolence as a tool for change, it is much more successful, both economically and obviously with loss of life, and also with making long-term, long-standing change. The difference between doing social change through violence versus nonviolence, for, let's say, doing bringing democracy to a country, if it happens nonviolently, within 5 years, there's like a 30% chance that it will remain a democracy, and it's less than 5% chance if that happens through violence.
Now, Mary, this is Dennis, by the way. Thank you for joining us today. You and Peter sound extremely passionate about keeping peace and using nonviolent ways. But I think we can agree that there are people out there that are just as passionate about doing things violently. And I think tell me about that challenge, because you're going to deal with people that will resist based on conditioning and their own beliefs.
One of the things is people get accustomed to making a god out of violence. That's what saves us. They really believe that the only way to really be secure is violence. And the history is showing more and more that is not the case. We have the marvelous examples of nonviolence. The overthrow of racism in America was primarily the nonviolent movement. How we, ended segregation. Also, the labor unions. It was primarily nonviolent organizing by people into labor unions that brought about a strength of the working class, developed the middle class in America. One third of the human race overthrew dictators as the Soviet Union. 1989 and 91.
Mm-hmm.
They did it nonviolently. Each of those Soviets that broke off from the former Soviet Union, each had their own dictator to deal with. And all except Romania did it nonviolently. And non-cooperation, of course, is one of the key things. People power is more powerful than violence, organized violence. This is being shown, as Mary was saying, through studies, actually showing that. And it is our experience that we go into war zones and we help to save lives. And we don't carry guns or tanks or cruise missiles or any of that. There is a different power. And actually, nonviolence is what holds is the glue that holds life together. And key in that nonviolence is respect for the very people you challenge. Like, you cannot make me hate anybody. I refuse to hate any human being that threatens my life. Why? Because I don't want that poison in my system, my mind, my heart, my body, which merely recycles the violence of the world. But the violence stops here in us who believe that there is a force more powerful than violence. And it is nonviolence, which is healing, which confronts violence, but we accept conflict as an ordinary part of life. In families, conflict is an ordinary part of life. But how do you transform it through alternatives to violence? And we've got to stop. A part of it is showing the power of this, then talking to people, getting them to see that their myth that violence is what works is wrong. Scientifically shown more and more, it is wrong to believe that that is what saves us.
Well, if
I think one of the things that is sort of common in the everyday person is that you don't know what to do differently when someone confronts you with violence. There's a phrase that we, or an idiom that we use in our training that says, when the only tool in your toolbox is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. And so part of what we're doing with our trainings is trying to put more tools in that toolbox for people so that when they're confronted with violence on the street or in a war zone or in their family, that they've got other things to try before they feel like there's only one resort.
Mm-hmm.
Ordinary people do extraordinary things. So we do nonviolence trainings to help people realize they have power other than calling 911, 911.
Well, explain your organization then, Peter, if I can just interject. I think your main offices are in Lansing, Michigan. Is that true?
Yeah.
And these training sessions happen in different places in the state. But
yes.
And we'll certainly mention this at the end, too. But if people want more information, I assume your website might be easy to find, MichiganPeaceTeam.org or something like that?
That's exactly right.
Okay. That
was
a guess.
We are opening an office in Detroit because people mm-hmm. there have been saying, with the violence in the city, Michigan Peace Team should be here. So in the weeks ahead, we are actually opening an office on the outer fringe of the inner city with mm-hmm. the idea of being a resource to neighborhoods that are dealing with violence. It will be, MPT members that are volunteers. They're not going to be paid for doing that out of the extension office in Detroit. So this is all exciting.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be a resource.
And we never go anywhere we're not invited. We don't show up like we're the Great White Hope, which is so racist and ethnocentric. We, it can explain to people the schools and skills and tools that we have to offer, but we don't go anywhere we're not invited.
Now, Mary, and with all the preparation and all the training, members of your team still do sometimes get hurt, don't they?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's fortunately not often.
Okay.
But it does happen because, especially when we're dealing with longer-term teams, the longer-term teams tend to be our international teams, there's so much more skill development that's emphasized before they go to wherever the team is. And part of that assumption when people volunteer for those teams is that they may be hurt, they may be killed, and that people are committed enough to nonviolence and to believing that one person can make a difference, and they're willing to take the risk that they could be hurt. And fortunately, it doesn't happen often, but it has happened.
And certainly in the
right now we have three people in our building that are going through part of their training to be our MPT peace team in Palestine, Israel. Hmm. Within the next handful of weeks, they will be going for months. And
wow.
So they are being prepared and trained and going through our kind of intensive training. A lot of role plays. We'll have some morning of role plays tomorrow, different kinds of scenarios, so that they get the feel of what it's like on the ground, and situations they might run into, and what it feels like, and how can they learn to respond. Plus, you've got to be a team together. You have to be a tight-knit team. Your lives depend on each other, and what good you do depends on your being a team, not lone rangers. So this is the kind of preparation teams in particular, as Mary was indicating.
Well, it's a very noble purpose. I know some of your peace teams in the Middle East, it seems like every couple of months I get an email from you folks, and unfortunately some of your members have been the victims of violence against them, whether it's, and it seems like most of the time it's Israeli troops there. I'm not pointing fingers. It takes two to tangle is one of my little mantras. In other words, there's problems on all sides if there's violence there. But But it's really unfortunate that, I mean, your volunteers are not doing demonstrations as such that are, and they're certainly not doing them in a militant or violent way, but they're trying to mediate the violence around them.
Our international teams, one of the things is being a presence, which can help change the climate. And sometimes our being there might chill out some of the violence. Mm-hmm. People won't get shot because our team is there. We've been told at times our teams have saved lives. And it's not that we're, as Mary says, a great white hope. It's that we come into a situation where we're invited, and we might help create some space for people so they take charge of their own lives. They do what they've got to do to work on their human rights in their conflict situation. Our role is to help create some space because we're there. The world is watching through our eyes, and that might chill out some violence. We at times will interpose ourselves physically, if that is the thing to do. We do what we can to make a difference so that they take care, charge of their lives. We're not coming in saving anybody from anything.
Well, explain how someone, besides finding out more information from your website, just very briefly, how long are some of the training sessions? How long do they take? You said in certain situations you have to do more extensive training. Talk about that a little bit. Now, of course, I guess we should say at the outset, everybody in your group is more or less, at least the most of the people are volunteers anyway. You might have some people like yourself need to be paid as executive directors to keep the paperwork straight and to answer the phones, perhaps. But how large is the Michigan Peace Team organization? And explain more about the length of the training that goes on.
The what we call the basic training, which is our standard one-day-long training. It's usually held on a Saturday, because that seems to work best with most people's schedule. And it's 8 hours long, usually 9 to 5. And that is the minimal amount of training that we require for someone who's going to do a domestic peace team. Domestic usually means within the United States and of short duration. So something like the Arab American Festival or Pride Day up here in Michigan, in Lansing, which is a statewide event. Nobody has less than 8 hours of training before they're on that kind of a peace team. Mm-hmm. And then the day of an event, there's additional training that's specific to what the people on the peace team are most likely to encounter. So we role play the things that are the most likely scenarios. And then if somebody wants to do one of our international teams, it's an additional 2 weekends, 24-hour days, 3-day long, that's not only, improving and increasing the skills that they've learned, but also having awareness of the area that they're going, some language awareness, some custom awareness, so that we in no way purposefully are being disrespectful when we go where we're invited.
Let's just briefly talk about that respect issue. Obviously, I tried to establish, and you mentioned that there's plenty of history about the effectiveness of nonviolent resistance and nonviolent conflict resolution, even though it's not taught in the schools. That's a little problem I have, that most history that's taught in schools, the history of wars, and it always seems like there's a winner, and I don't think there's ever a winner when people kill one another. I've told my listeners that I've been a pacifist since the 1960s, clearly, and I can't understand why we don't teach the full impact of what we're doing, like the full destruction of wars, and how it doesn't resolve violence. It just sort of temporarily changes it, but perpetuates it. War engenders war.
I think what's interesting is that a lot of people do not understand that there's nothing passive about pacifism.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You won't resort to violence to solve your problems. It certainly doesn't mean you don't work on them actively.
Right. The The other thing is the spiritual and or religious connection. Some of the people in Michigan Peace Team are significant representatives of different religious groups, religions. But you're not per se a religious group. Like Pax Christi, I'm familiar with, and that's a Roman Catholic nonviolent group. But that's not a essential.
We deliberately chose to ground Michigan Peace Team in the spirituality of nonviolence so that it refers to all 7 billion human beings that are our brothers and sisters and this Earth community and the galaxy and this whole universe. because all of that is key to being, you know, growing in that sense of awareness. We are a part of everyone and everything. And therefore, having reverence for all life. And then we have to deal with the demonization that goes on. The demonization is widespread in our cultures. Another factor is about nonviolence. You look at when there is violence, who's benefiting from it and who's victim of it. You look at those questions and you name the systemic violence that's taking place. Who's benefiting and who's victim? Who's making money off of what's going on, et cetera, so that truth is key in the whole thing. What is the truth of the actual situation? And so that means withdrawing from our own addictions, our own cultural biases, so that, you know, I'm still trying to grow up, you know, I'm 29 now, and I'm still trying to grow up. And that means daily learning to face truth that may be difficult for me. So being such a person means we try to do that as community together. We help each other face reality, deal with our own faults and weaknesses and resistances and brokenness, and keep on growing together. And we draw on each other's skills, and we constantly try to give hope that it is possible to change things. Because when people say, well, we can't do anything about it, that becomes self-fulfilling prophecy.
It sounds like this is good for, this would be awesome for anybody, everybody, not just people that are contemplating either domestically or internationally dealing with conflict. And I'll tell you, I'd like to take this just to make peace with my mother-in-law.
Please.
It can help, really.
You probably can make a training at the new site that we're
in Detroit, yeah. I'll tell you what, though. You've not seen conflict like this. Guys, I want to thank you.
We had a woman named Mary in Ypsilanti who did make the 8-hour training in her church that we did because she wanted to be a good mama for her two young kids. That was her goal.
That's a good thing.
After she had made the training, some weeks later, she came upon a police officer apprehending some young man who had done something wrong. The officer was agitated and hitting on this young man. So Mary said that she went up to the officer and said something like, "Officer, he's not resisting you. Stop hitting him." And the officer came to his senses and stopped.
Awesome.
Mary said she would not have been able to do that if she had not made the 8-hour training
right.
in church.
Well, here on the Journal, we do thank both Peter Doherty and Mary Hanna to describe the work of Michigan Peace Team, a very significant organization doing very brave work for nonviolence and to just get, I think if I may use the word love, love to be the standard of interaction, that sort of compassionate understanding of other people and the listening and involvement that that maybe can get us out of this terrible cycle of destruction. We're looking forward and certainly keep WHFR radio, it's, WHFR at hfcc.edu in your communications. We'd like to let our listeners know about the Detroit office and your continued activities. As I said, I have personal, I get the personal email from you folks. Maybe I'll register for the station too. How would you finally, if people are still dubious about the value of nonviolence as a solution here, to our many problems, where would they begin? Just give us a couple of ideas, and then we'll have to say goodbye for now. But I mentioned some famous people that they could read. But how else can they learn about nonviolence? What would you recommend?
One of the things that might be of interest to them, I'm actually going to put the link to it on our website later today, we have a YouTube channel, and it has video clips of all the great teachers that they can, you know, learn from that are who we take our wisdom from. Dr. King and James Lawson, who was the person who started the workshops for Dr. King to teach people how to do the sit-ins at the lunch counter. Different kinds of people with different perspectives, but who all believe that one way or another, one person really can make a difference, and nonviolence works.
And that sounds like a good place to start. MichiganPeaceTeam.org. You can look for the links to some of these videos that will get, you know, a little, even more than our 30-minute discussion here, a little more explanation out about nonviolence and its effectiveness. And again, my congratulations to you folks and the great work that you do. Hopefully it's got to continue, unfortunately, until we can get peace in this world. But that's the goal, and that's just about as noble as we can get here. So I'm all choked up. Thanks for your time today. I've seen you folks both at a distance at some of your meetings, but never got a chance to shake your hands in person. So this is my verbal way of doing it. Thank you, Peter Daugherty and Mary Hanna, and keep up this great work.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for now. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
That was, as I just got done saying, the Michigan Peace Team, and we're very happy to have them on for the first half hour of today's show, and we want you to think about the possibility of nonviolent civil disobedience, nonviolent resistance, nonviolent mediation for violent problems, and we're going to take our usual mid-hour time to listen to a couple of comments from Jim Hightower, our syndicated populist here. We'll be back with more of the new WHFR Journal first show in 2013. Okay, we're playing, but we're not hearing it, so we're going to keep talking then until we can hear it. We've got some computer problems here at the station, and we're going to thoroughly research them. Dennis, what can you tell us about the news here in Dearborn?
So much. Well, actually, there's not as much going on as I had hoped.
But, well, I wanted to mention something here, too, and that was we went over last week some of the top stories, and I asked you your choice. You talked about your involvement with Dearborn Heights and so on.
Nondescript national brands have soured in recent
here's
years.
Jim Hightower.
But innovative small-batch hometown yeast wranglers have tapped a burgeoning market of brewski lovers who are reaching for the real gusto. Since 2004, craft beers have doubled their share of the U.S. market. Some 250 upstart breweries opened last year alone, bringing their total number to nearly 2,000. This has been a true populist economic phenomenon. Consumers and artisans have found each other and spontaneously created an alternative, locally based economy that helps sustain themselves and their community, rather than having their money siphoned out by faraway profit takers. Of course, the big boys are slyly trying to sink their own taps into the craft success of the small guys. Budweiser and Miller, for example, are now marketing pretend craft beers, having bought such once local brands as Chicago's Goose Island and Wisconsin's Leinenkugel. Unabashed by this consumer deception, however, a Miller spokesman sniffed, "We don't concern ourselves with what someone else defines as a craft brewer." Wow, sounds like Miller's man quaffed one too many mugs of a genuine local beer from San Diego called Arrogant Bastard. This is Jim Hightower saying, when in doubt about whether a local beer is really local, ask the locals.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Washington keeps handing massive bailouts to Wall Street giants and multi-billion-dollar annual subsidies to the likes of Big Oil, which is a nice boost to the bottom lines of the one percenters. But these giveaways do absolutely nothing to perk up America's grassroots economy, which not only is where the rest of us live and work, but also is the only place that can generate real national prosperity. Congress can't seem to grasp a basic law of nature. You can't keep a mighty tree alive, much less expect it to thrive, by only spritzing the fine leaves at its tippy top. The fate of the whole tree depends on nurturing the grassroots. Sadly, America's corporate and political powers today are content to be a bunch of leaf spritzers, blithely oblivious to the dangerous shriveling of the grassroots. To witness the damage they're doing, just look at our nation's desiccated minimum wage. Set at $7.25 an hour 3 years ago, its real value has since been gutted by inflation, reducing the wage's current purchasing power to a sub-poverty level of $6.75 an hour. That's only $14,000 a year for full-time work. Not only would increasing it help these hard-working people make ends meet, but it also would provide a direct jolt of nourishment to our overall economy. It's been shown again and again that every dime of a minimum wage hike is spent by its recipients, circulating upward in our local economies as they increase their purchases of such basics as food, kids' clothing, and health care. This is Jim Hightower saying, this kind of percolate-up economics works for the many, not just the wealthiest few, and that helps, at least minimally, to restore a bit of moral balance to an economy and society now being torn apart by gross inequality. For more information on raising today's poverty wage, go to timeforaraise.org.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Yeah, first of all, craft brews, that talk about local business, entrepreneurial stuff. It's somewhat true. I know there's some local brew pubs in Royal Oak.
Sure.
I mean, they actually do the brewing, and then they run the restaurant that's right there.
Ann Arbor has a couple.
Ann Arbor has a couple.
Sure.
I don't think there's a brew pub in Dearborn right now.
Nothing I can think of.
Plenty of places you can buy beer, but some of the brew pubs are it's kind of a fun beverage because depending on what's in season, they will add, like around Halloween, they'll put a little pumpkin in there, you know, and so they're different flavors actually from organic vegetables that they somehow pulverize and toss in, and that's kind of fun. At least, you know, it take a lot of beer drinking to get seriously drunk or damage your health, but many people have done it that way. Nonetheless, I that's an example of local and meeting the needs of people, and that they're actually. And he mentioned too, who owns Anheuser-Busch? It's not an American company anymore. Is it German now or Chinese or whatever? Anyway, it's sometimes people want a little more local connection with their businesses, and that's great. Plus, his other comment was about, of course, look at the grassroots. And I think the brew pub was an example of a local business that can grow because of a local connection. But we need more people working on issues, volunteering however they can on important things. Yeah, important things. Michigan Peace Team sounds dangerous to me, but in fact, it's the good work, the good deeds that we need to spread. And there's many other ways. You don't have to go out there on the war lines in the Middle East to foster peace and nonviolence, as Dennis said, maybe in his own household, but maybe in your town and maybe maybe it's an outreach out of your church. Michigan Peace Team said they did one of their nonviolent sessions at a church because they were invited to do it for their congregation. What a great idea for some local churches to invite the Michigan Peace Team in to give these conflict resolution, nonviolent mediation courses. At least the end, I think they got 3 or 4 levels of intensity, depending on what you need and what you're interested in. But these are things that should be happening more in our society. Well, it's controversial, but we got to keep on track. It's called, going with the flow on radio. And last week I mentioned, I read some of the highlights of a commentary from Michael Moore, the documentary filmmaker. It makes his home in Michigan. Well, of course, he was born here in Flint, and his first documentary was all about how GM was just closing down their facilities in Flint and not really caring about their workers at all. And even the city wasn't able to do too much about people being tossed out of their homes. Last week, in his sort of summary of issues about the new year, one of the things he mentioned it briefly, was that he's going to stop saying, "I support the troops." Okay? And obviously it got a few people to make comments about him.
Yeah, on the surface it sounds controversial.
But I thought it was good that he did write another commentary. And, of course, you can go to michaelmoore.com if you want to either subscribe to his comments, which are very well written and defended. As I said, you don't get this in the little sound bites that he's allowed to say whenever he's on television, whether it's MSNBC or even Fox News when they bring him in as a whipping boy. So here's his comment. I can't, again, don't have the time even on this show to read all of them. But he says, I don't support the troops, America, and neither do you. I am tired of the ruse that we are playing on these brave citizens in our armed forces. And guess what? A lot of these soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines see right through these words, I support the troops, spoken by Americans with such false sincerity, false because our actions don't match our words. These young men and women sign up to risk their lives, their very lives, to protect us. And what do they get in return? Number one, they're sent off to wars that have nothing to do with defending America or saving our lives. And if you don't know that, folks, you're listening to the wrong, watching the wrong TV channels, or you're not reading enough books from all the people that have comments about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and so on. And Michael Moore believes, he says, these people, our soldiers, are used as pawns so that the military-industrial complex can make billions of dollars and the rich here can expand their empire. By supporting the troops, that means I'm supposed to shut up, don't ask questions, do nothing to stop the madness, and sit by and watch thousands of them die? He says, well, I've done an awful lot to try and end this, but the only way you can honestly say you support the troops is to work night and day, like the Michigan Peace Team, to get them out of these hell holes that they've been sent to. And what have I done this week to bring the troops home? Well, nothing. So if I say I support the troops, don't believe me. I clearly don't support the troops because I've got more important things to do today, like return an iPhone that doesn't work and take my car in for a tune-up. Okay? Second point. While the troops we claim to support are serving their country, bankers who say they too support the troops foreclose on the actual homes of these soldiers and evict their families while they're overseas. Have I gone, Michael Moore, and stood in front of the sheriff's deputy as he's throwing a military family out of their home? No. And there's your proof that I don't support the troops, because if I did, I would organize mass sit-ins to block the doors of these homes. Instead, I'm having Chilean sea bass tonight. There's a few really good restaurants in Traverse City. In fact, one right next to his theater that serves Chilean sea bass. Number three, he says, how many of you who say you support the troops have visited a VA, that's a Veterans Administration hospital, to bring aid and comfort to the sick and wounded? I haven't, he admits. How many of you have any clue that what it's like to deal with the VA? I don't. Therefore, you would be safe to say that I don't support the troops. And neither do you. Number four, who amongst you big enthusiastic supporters of the troops, so-called, can tell me the approximate number of service women who have been raped while in the military? Answer, 19,000, mostly, female troops are raped or sexually assaulted every year by fellow American troops. What have you or I done to bring these criminals to justice? What's that you say? Out of sight, out of mind? These women have suffered, and I've done nothing. So don't ever let me get away with telling you I support the troops, because sadly, I don't, and neither do you. Isn't that quite a number, Dennis? 19,000 rapes in the military, mostly females.
Mind-boggling.
Yeah. Number five, help a homeless vet today? That's his fifth point. How about yesterday? Last week? Last year? Ever? But I thought you support the troops. The number of homeless veterans is staggering. On any given night, at least 60,000 veterans are sleeping on the streets of the country that proudly supports the troops. This is disgraceful and shameful, isn't it? Of course, I think all homelessness is disgraceful, sure, and shameful in a country supposedly as rich with as high a standard of living as we have. And it exposes, he goes on to say, all those so-called troop supporters who always vote against social programs that would help these veterans. Tonight, there are at least 12,700 Iraq, Afghanistan veterans homeless and sleeping on the street. I've never lent a helping hand to one of the many vets I've seen sleeping on the street. And it's got to be cold in Traverse City, I'm interjecting. I can't bear to look, he says, and I walk past them very quickly. That's called not supporting the troops, which I guess I don't, and neither do you. Feel guilty yet? Well, here's point number six. And you know, the beautiful thing about all this support, Michael Moore says, all this support you and I have been giving to the troops. They feel this love and support so much. A record number of them are killing themselves every week. In fact, there are now more soldiers killing themselves than soldiers being killed in combat. Okay, and here's the numbers. Through November of 2012, there were 323 suicides and only 210 combat deaths. Yes, you're more likely to die by your own hand in the United States military than by Al-Qaeda or the Taliban. And an estimated 18 veterans kill themselves each day, or one in five of all U.S. suicides. Though no one really knows because we don't bother to keep track. Now, that's what I call support. That's an irony, of course. These troops are really feeling the love, people. Let me hear you say it again. I support the troops. Louder. I support the troops. Well, there, that's better. I'm sure they heard us. And don't forget to fly our flag, wear your flag lapel pin, and never, ever let a service member pass you by without saying thank you for your service. I'm sure that's all they need to keep them from putting a bullet in their heads. Do your best to keep your support up for the troops, because God knows I certainly can't any longer. Here's his conclusion, folks. He's being ironic there, and I hope you got the tone. Michael Moore, documentary filmmaker based in Traverse City, owner of the State Theater there. He says, I don't support the troops or any of those other hollow and hypocritical platitudes uttered by Republicans and frightened Democrats. Here's what I do support. I support them coming home. I support them being treated well. I support peace. And I beg any young person reading this or listening to this broadcast who is thinking of joining the armed forces to please reconsider. Our War Department has done little to show you they won't recklessly put your young life in harm's way for a cause that has nothing to do with what you signed up for. They will not help you once they've used you and spit you back into society. If you're a woman, they will not protect you from rapists in their ranks. And because you have a conscience and you know right from wrong, you do not want yourself being used to kill civilians in other countries who never did anything to hurt us. We are currently involved in at least half a dozen military actions around the world. Don't become the next statistic so that General Electric can post another record profit while paying no taxes, taxes that otherwise would be paying for the artificial leg they've kept you waiting for months to receive. I support you, says Michael Moore, and we'll try to do more to be there for you. And the best way you can support me and the ideals our country says it believes in is to get out of the military as soon as you can and never look back. And please, next time some supporter of the troops, quote-unquote, says to you with that concerned look on their face, I thank you for your service, unquote, you have my permission to punch their lights out, figuratively speaking, of course. Now he goes on to say in parentheses, there is something I've done to support the troops other than help lead the effort to stop these senseless wars. At the movie theater I run in Michigan, I became the first person in town to institute an affirmative action plan for hiring returning Iraq-Afghanistan vets. I'm working to get more businesses in town to join with me in this effort to find jobs for these returning soldiers. I also let all service members into the movies for free every day. A little bit of distraction there, I guess. Well, that's a strong statement, and you may not agree. I hope you do agree with the goal of peace, but we've suggested so far in the show today that local action and action towards conflict resolution and peaceful mediation may be the only real long-term answer for this. So we're teaching you something, at least suggesting that you learn more about these issues, because there's evidence that this approach works if we would only implement it. Dennis is sitting here dumbfounded.
I am. The opinions expressed are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College or the station, although I can't see why anybody would argue with peace or nonviolence, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you're going to argue with it, then that's the epitome of arguing, isn't it? You know, we talked at length the last show about some of our, most significant news stories of the year. And even though we'd been talking about the biggest news story of the year for many of our shows leading up to last week, we never really talked about it last week, and that's the new City Hall.
Right. I think this has connected to the Dearborn community in ways that will reverberate, I guess that's the word, through 2013, all the way through the elections.
Absolutely.
This coming November. At least a few challengers to Mayor O'Reilly and current council people hope it will, because I think they feel they've got an issue they can be for. The problem for me is, of course, they can't change it. The new city hall is being bought.
Right.
It's a done deal, and they are going to move in, maybe not fully until 2014. There's remodeling. There's other things to do. But was that a bad decision? It's going to be, it seems to be, at least from the estimates they had when they did the deal, according to Mayor O'Reilly last March, was it March when we had him on the show here talking about this, and in his State of the City address last year, by golly, it's a more energy efficient building. It will cost less to maintain it. And of course, there's major renovations and upgrades that major maintenance that's required on the old building that they may get out of having to do themselves, having to pay for.
But your issue with it is that they didn't have anything finalized on the old building.
Well,
right?
Personally, yeah, I agree with some of the critics, is that you really shouldn't sell, you shouldn't buy a new building until you've actually sold the old building, until it's at least signed. And of course, the agreement for the old city hall is not finalized yet. It's up to the ArtServe group, who have the a priority.
They have an option.
They are the option to buy,
sure.
Yes, but they haven't got the money yet.
No.
And I don't know why we haven't heard about that. I know getting grants is tough in this economy, as they say, but they've gotten grants for their other facilities in other cities, so they have a track record of being successful at it. But in this case, it hasn't happened yet, so I wonder what the time frame is going to be on that. Have they been turned down a lot so far? The problem is, if we don't sell the old city hall, we've got a building that's vacant, and
yeah.
What do we do with that? It's just a big question, and so that's that. As I said, it was a difficult choice. There's nothing perfect in terms of choices. The ADS, is that it? The ADT building
ADT
that
building.
They bought for the new city hall, it was vacant, and it was available for a really good price.
Yeah, price
and
is right.
So it probably would have been bought by somebody else. Maybe it'd still be vacant now. Maybe it'll still be vacant in a year if the city hadn't bought it. It's a relatively large building,
yeah.
But I think somebody would have bought it eventually. So the city, I guess, couldn't take a chance, and they can't just build a new city hall from scratch somewhere, because that would have cost even much
sure.
more than buying this. And they said, well, it's a great deal. It's a low cost, and if we don't buy it now, it may not be available. And then we'll really be stuck with all the cost of modernizing, upgrading, and maintaining the older building, which would have cost millions and millions of dollars by itself.
It just seems that the city could have worked on something similar. The arrangement at City Hall is an option. It seems that they could have had an option pending the sale of City Hall as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Just a
yeah.
similar arrangement. They went in feet first. And as you said, the price was right at the time, and who knows? There's a lot we will never know about the deal.
Yeah, well, a majority of our councilmen went along with it, so if they wanted to resist it, they could have said no, and they didn't. So the full story or why they voted for that may be an election issue for each one of them that are going to
very good point.
Run again. We've heard rumors that a couple council people will not run again.
Right.
We don't know for sure until the time comes to put your name in the ring or not.
Sure.
So.
And a lot of people will keep the cards close to their
mm-hmm.
vest. I mean, and who wouldn't? There's a similar situation going on in Dearborn Heights with the race for mayor. So, and I do want to take this opportunity to promote the fact that Dearborn Heights News and Views, the once-a-month forum show on the second Tuesday of each month, will be this coming Tuesday from 1 to 2. We're pre-recording the show, and we hope to have a couple council members on as guests to kind of go back over doing a recap
yeah.
of the year like is so common this time.
Well, we're going to conclude the WHFR Journal, the new WHFR Journal for today, January 4th, 2013, with a little pacifist music. It's Motown, but people don't realize that Marvin Gaye and others were doing some pretty strong comments that amazingly and unfortunately are still important to think about today. So thank you for listening. Thank you, Dennis, to the News Times Herald and the Press and Guide in Dearborn. Thank you for your continued support of our show. And we'll be back again next week. And don't forget to try listening to Democracy Now!, now going to precede this hour from 12 to 1 every Friday here on WHFR Dearborn.